The individual soul may sometimes find himself under the control of the illusory potency Maya. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always the controller of Maya. In this way, the individual spirit soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are different eternally. The individual soul is spiritual in nature, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is also spiritual in nature. Thus, the individual soul is one of the potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the other hand, because he is part and parcel of him, the individual soul is also not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead eternally. If the individual soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are simultaneously one and different eternally, then the eternal difference between them is most important. The eternal nature and duty of the individual soul is to serve, is service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If he forgets this duty, the individual soul comes under Maya's control. Then the soul stays away from Lord Krishna. That staying away from Lord Krishna means that the soul enters the material world. It is not possible to give a historical account describing when in time the soul first fell into the material world. That is why it is said, Anadi Bahirmukha. The living entity has been attracted by the external feature from time immemorial. This staying away from Krishna in the time of entering Maya's world are both different from the soul's eternal nature. They are perversions of it. So we notice here is the point, as it said, the definition of why it's anadi is because of it can't be calculated. Like that. It's not saying he started in the material world. He's part of the material world. It's saying the point is that it can't be calculated. So it says here the time of entering and staying away from Krishna and entering this material world are both different from the soul's eternal nature. That means there is a beginning of it. Material world means there's a beginning and an end. So in the calculation, there has to be a beginning and an end. But because you can't calculate it, then it's called anadi. This is just so we don't get overly worried about it. It is because he is in contact with Maya and under her control that the soul's temporary nature and temporary duties are manifested. The eternal nature of the soul is one, unchanged, and completely faultless. The temporary natures created by contact with the material world are of great variety. After speaking these words, the saintly Paramahamsa Babaji stopped and began to chant the names of Lord Hari. After hearing this description of the truth, the saintly sannyasi offered Dandavat obeisances and said, O Master, today I will think over all that you have said. If I have any questions tomorrow, I will place them before your feet. So that ends this chapter one. So Babaji here has started the explanation of the Sambandha Gyan. The Sambandha Gyan is very important, because everything's based on relationship. One cannot be attracted to something if he doesn't know the relationship. Right? You find something you like, but you'll see as you're establishing a relationship with it to be attracted. You see something, let's say something to eat, but you've already established in there that this is food, you have a stomach, and your stomach is empty. So therefore, you find a nice relationship. Therefore, you're attracted. Otherwise, if your stomach is full and you're not hungry, the same attractive food you don't care for. So, because there's no relationship. There's no space. There's no space in your stomach. There's no way that you can establish relationship. So attraction is not there. So this is the whole thing. When you establish a relationship, then there's attraction. From attraction, then there's attachment. Right? And then when there's attachment, then there's endeavor or there's activity. So that's the whole thing, is to change the relationship of being relationship with Krishna and relationship in the mood of servant. Right? That's why he made the point, is he thinks he's the master. This is the essential point. You change that one thing, then you change the whole view of how the living entity does things. It's because I am the master, Therefore, the mind accepts and rejects based on that principle. Right? And that's the whole why we do things, because the mind wants to do or doesn't want to do. Right? We can force the issue with the intelligence, like that, but ultimately you have to get it to the point, the mind is trained, that it changes its desires, changes its idea. So that is actually means the yogis and the jnanis, then they, by the intellect, then they control, to some degree, the senses. But they ultimately don't. Right? Because their idea is that they are God. You know, so, or they're controlling for a higher purpose. They'll control the senses now, then they'll go to the heavenly planets, or get some good position, you know, in the universal affairs, or, you know, get something here in this world. So then, they're controlling for that. Intelligence is being used for a higher purpose, though the central feature is still, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So when that's changed to, I am the servant, then you look at everything, you accept and reject based on, I am a servant. If I am servant, then is this favorable, or is this not favorable? Right? And then the intelligence is then used how to apply that favorable situation, or how to avoid that unfavorable situation, rather than, you know, spiritual favorable situation. Rather than, we have a material situation, I'm the enjoyer of it, how to use my intelligence to get what I want, or to avoid those things that get in the way of my enjoying mood. So the relationship is the most important thing. That's why it has to be discussed first. So sometimes it's thought, well, we'll just sit and discuss so many things about the Lord, His intimate pastimes. That's nice if one immediately establishes a relationship there and can enter that, can work that. One is immediately attracted, immediately attached, and then one works within that. We see Krishna played the flute, gopis were attracted, they became attached to that, and then they acted, they left, they went to the rasa dance. They gave up everything on the spot, right? In front of everybody, in front of their family members, in front of all the things that were they were, you know, considered valuable. Their whole lifestyle, they just dropped it at that moment and just walked out on it. So they were able to do this because of their actual relationship and attraction and attachment for Krishna. But otherwise, if not, then we have to learn about, if it doesn't happen immediately, like Krishna says, then sadhana bhakti is the next option. So that means then we must know something. We must know who we are, what we're dealing with, you know, who is Krishna. What is the relationship? He's the master. That's why it's always mentioned that. He's the master, he's the Lord. Because we're always thinking, we're the master, we're the Lord. We're the enjoyer. You know, it's eternal there, material world's temporary. Because we always think material world's eternal. And we're going to control and enjoy it eternally. So this first discussion is then establishing Krishna's position as superior, the living entity as his part and parcel. And that the living entity is servant of the Lord, and the material energy is the inferior energy of the Lord, to be engaged in the Lord's service. Okay. So any questions on this chapter? Okay. So chapter 2. Jivar Nitya Dharma Shuddha O Sanatana. The soul's eternal nature is pure and everlasting. The next morning, saintly Premdas Babaji was plunged in the ecstasies of Raja. Although the saintly sannyasi wished to place some questions before him, there was no opportunity. Then in the afternoon, when they had finished their Madhukari begging of alms, they both entered the cottage of Madhavi and Malati vines. The saintly Paramahamsa Babaji then kindly said, "O best of devotees, now that you have heard my explanation of the true nature of the soul, what is your conclusion?" Happy to hear these words, the saintly sannyasi asked, "O Master, if the individual spirit soul is by nature only atomic in size, how is it possible that its eternal nature is pure and perfect? If the soul is created at a certain point in time, then the soul's nature is also created at that time. If this is true, how can the soul's nature be eternally existing in past, present, and future?" Hearing this question, the Paramahamsa Babaji meditated on the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya, smiled, and then replied, "O noble-hearted one, Even though he is atomic in size, the soul is nevertheless perfect, pure, and eternal. His being atomic is only in relation to his substance. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna Chandra, is alone great in substance. The multitude of individual souls are his limitless atomic parts. Although the fire itself is not broken up into parts, many tiny sparks come from it. In the same way, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Conscious Being, is not divided into parts, but still a great multitude of individual spirit souls are manifested from him. As each spark has all the power of fire, so each individual soul has all the powers of consciousness. As each spark has all the burning powers of fire and can, in the right circumstances, start a fire that will burn down the entire material universe, so each individual soul has the ability to fall in love with Lord Krishna Chandra. He has the ability to be plunged in an ocean of love for Lord Krishna. As long as he is not in touch with his original nature, the conscious and atomic soul cannot manifest his natural powers. In truth, the nature of the soul is considered in terms of the soul's perception of others. Thinking, what is the soul's eternal nature? One should carefully search for the truth. The soul's eternal nature is love. Therefore, the soul is not unconscious or inanimate. It is different from unconscious matter. The soul's nature is to be conscious. The soul's nature is to love. In its pure state, love is identical with devotional service to Lord Krishna. Therefore, love, manifested as devotional service to Lord Krishna, is the original nature of the individual soul. So here, the qualities that were mentioned are in relationship to this attraction, this affection for Krishna. We notice here that he did not give the option that the spark will create a fire and in this way become big like God. This is the Mayavadi's idea. He can only actually become big because of love. That's all. That is what is great. Like that. Krishna is the greatest. He is the unlimited. And the soul is small. But through affection or love for the Lord, that way he becomes great. Or as great as the Lord, if not greater. Prabhupada makes the point is that the living entity, because of his affection for the Lord, brings the Lord under his control. So that means the devotee actually becomes greater than the Lord. But that's because of affection. Not in size, not in the amount of the qualities, like this. So none of these things control our greater. It's in relationship to affection for the Lord. So that is the natural position of the soul, is affection. That affection has been perverted into lust here in this world. Like that. It's the same thing, it's just been perverted. We want to enjoy it rather than serve. Right? So as soon as we want to serve, then that starts to become turned. Like that. And when we want to serve Krishna, that's when it becomes proper. When we want to serve, it changes from impious to pious. And when we want to serve Krishna, it goes from pious into transcendental. So this is the soul may be situated in two states of existence. One, the soul's pure state, and two, the soul's state of material bondage. In the pure state, the individual soul is manifested as pure spirit only, free of any contact with intimate matter. In his pure state, the soul is atomic. And for this reason, it is possible that he may change his state of existence. Because Lord Krishna is the Supreme Conscious, he never changes his state of existence. In truth, Lord Krishna is supreme, perfect, pure, and eternal. In the conditioned state, the individual's spirit soul is pathetic, broken, and impure. In his original state, the soul is great, unbroken, pure, and eternal. When the individual soul is in his pure state, his pure nature is manifested. that when the individual soul is in contact with the illusory potency Maya, the soul's pure state is not manifested. Then his original nature is perverted and he is impure. Then he does not take shelter of Lord Krishna. Then he is tormented by happiness and sufferings. When he forgets the service of Lord Krishna, the soul finds himself situated in the material world of repeated birth and death. As long as he remains pure, the individual soul retains his original nature. Then he understands that he is the servant of Lord Krishna. However, when he comes into contact with the illusory potency Maya, the soul becomes impure. In that condition, the understanding of Lord Krishna's service is diminished. Then the soul accepts many different material bodies, one after another. When he is in contact with the illusory potency Maya, the individual soul is covered by a body of gross and subtle material elements. First, the soul identifies himself with the subtle material body. Second, he identifies himself with the gross material body. Third, he identifies himself as the subtle and gross bodies mixed together. In this way, the soul's conception of his identity becomes changed. In his pure state, the individual soul is an unalloyed servant of Lord Krishna. So these are the way the ego then is manifesting. Okay, so he's... So if the subtle material body basically is... The subtle body then, his mind, his whole idea of... he's the enjoyer, he's the controller. Then the intelligence, very intelligent, he can use these things. And his idea, you know, whatever his idea of himself as controller, enjoyer. So then you have the gross manifestation of this, then the body. Because then the gross elements, the senses, then are connected there. And the gross identity is manifesting as the gross body. So then when you combine them, then there's work, there's activity. So So one has one's internal idea of oneself, one's external, and then what one does, what one performs. So another aspect, that's looking at it just from gross subtle, and then the two of them working together. Another way of looking at it is how they're combined, how they're connected to each other, is from the false ego that creates this body. So that is you can say the subtle, but you know, it makes the gross body. And then you have the intelligence, then which then is connected to the senses. That's the second kind of ego. And then the central is the mind. The mind is what puts the two together. The mind is because it wants to do something, therefore intelligence and senses then work together, the gross and subtle, the ego and the body then is activated. It's because the mind wants to do something or doesn't want to do something. So that is another also way of understanding this. So is the gross, the body, then the subtle, the senses and the intelligence. And then the mind is what connects them. Like that, and makes it work. So these three aspects are what makes the false ego. Like that. So sometimes you get different means. We generally think of the element false ego, but our false ego is actually bigger than that. The whole body, the senses, the intelligence, the mind, this is all false ego. Because it's none of it's us. Right? The soul is separate. So all this is false ego. So the overall false ego then is categorized into these three areas. That coming from ignorance, or our false identity in the gross body. Then what coming from passion, the intelligence and the senses, and then what's coming from goodness or the mind. Like that. So the mind is the central feature what it's desiring, that's what the other two forms of ego then do. They're engaged. When he identifies himself as the subtle material body, the soul thinks of himself as the enjoyer of the fruits of his work. In this way, his conception of himself as a servant of Lord Krishna becomes covered over by his misidentification of himself as the subtle material body. When he identifies himself as the gross material body, he thinks, I am a Brahmin, I am a king, I am poor, I am unhappy, I am defeated by disease and grief, I am a wife, I am a husband. Thus the soul's misidentification with the gross material body is manifested in a great variety of ways. When the soul thus has a false conception of his identity, his original nature becomes perverted. The original nature of the pure soul is pure love. That pure love appears in the subtle material body in a perverted way as material pleasure, suffering, lust, and hatred. That pure love is seen in the gross material body in an even more perverted way, as material eating, drinking, and a host of other so-called pleasures derived from contact with intimate matter. In this way, you can see that the soul's eternal nature is manifested only when the soul is in the pure state of existence. When the soul is situated in material bondage, only the soul's temporary nature is manifested. Thus, the eternal nature of the soul is that the soul is perfect, pure, and eternal. The temporary nature of the soul I will describe in more detail on another day. So we can see that Prabhupada would be always making these points. We're not this body, and we're not the enjoyer. Like that. So we may think, okay, they're very basic, let's get on to some, more higher level things. But what Prabhupada has given, that is the fundamental points of the working elements. Means what Prabhupada has given, he's given everything that was required to get out of this material world. It's just a matter of developing it, maturing it. Like that. So it's not a matter of that, this knowledge we've gotten before, okay, that's basic, now I'll move on to something higher. This is more of it's a material concept, but it's also a especially modern concept. Because what a child learns when they're small, adults won't use. You teach them some nursery rhymes, you give them some crayons and some paper, you make some paper airplanes, you do some many little things. They won't use it in their life. The only way they'll use it is then when their kids come along or others' kids, then they'll do the same thing with them. So it's useful to engage them, but it's never really useful in their life. So therefore, what's learned in the beginning, when you get more mature and your intelligence is there, it must be something different. Otherwise, then how will you identify that I am mature, I'm advanced, I'm developed? Because you're doing something that can't be done on the lower level. But that's all right when you are, this mundane concept. But the Vedic concept is that you take the what is it? That's saying? Yeah, eloquence, true eloquence is truth spoken concisely. Is that you've taken the essence of the thing and just spoken it so simply that it can be grasped. So we see that Prabhupada, he would give these essential points, and everybody, doesn't matter who they are, if they're adults or children, they're brand new, they've hardly met the devotees, just a few times, they all know these essential truths. I'm not this body, I'm not the enjoyer, Krishna is God, I'm his servant, this material world is illusion, like this, the spiritual world. So if we look at this is all like just the essence of the wholesome Mandagyan. From that, then you can develop it more and more and more deep, technically, like that. But the main point is not whether it's just the essential points or it's very technically deep, it's if you're able to realize it and apply it. That's the thing. That's what we want to get to. So depending upon the individual and their service, then there's various levels that they may function at, according to their conditioned nature. you have to engage the conditioned nature. They're very intelligent, then you have to engage it very technically. They're not so intelligent, you don't have to, you just have to give the essence. The main thing is that they serve Krishna, and in that service, then everything will be revealed. Like that. That's the essential. So we see that these points here have already been given by Srila Prabhupada. And sometimes the definitions, like Prabhupada said, the definition that he gave for you know, Nityabada, is that it's we've been here so long, we can't calculate how long it is. So we see that's directly Bhaktivinoda Thakura's explanation here. So all these essential truths then Srila Prabhupada has given. And then with that, then we understand what Bhaktivinoda Thakura is saying. And so when that false conception is there, then the love for Krishna becomes perverted. So we have to give up that false conception if we want to reawaken the actual love. See, we can't have both like that. There may be transition where they'll be dealing with both. But if we really want to taste pure love for Krishna, then any dealings, any attractions, attachments to this world ultimately have to be given up. Any identities, that I am the enjoyer and I am this body. These have to be given up, like that. Any questions on any of this? Yes.
Until which level we have to develop this essential philosophical understanding to be sufficient to get out of the material?
Can you hear? Yeah. So the knowledge, I say. So you have two aspects that you're doing. One is, it means the sambandha jnana, or this knowledge of the relationships and all that, then are important that we understand who we are. So that then changes our view on this world and our activities. So then it starts to make us become freed from that endeavor to enjoy this world. Right? So it pulls us back from that. Then the other is our relationship with Krishna. Right? So then the beginning stages is that he's God and I'm servant. Right? So that's the basic beginning stage. So that's essential. So this is also part of the beginning stage. It must be done, must be obtained. Because it's like basically we'll accept, okay, he's bigger than me, so therefore I'll defer to them. Right? Otherwise, if they weren't bigger, then I wouldn't. But since he's God and I'm not, and I'm small and he's big, okay, then we have to admit that, yeah, he's the boss, he's the enjoyer, and we're not. So this, in the beginning, is important to get us up to the stage of liberation. It means where we cross beyond this conditioned nature. But this knowledge in itself, then at that point, doesn't have any function beyond that, because we're not, if we're on the platform of the soul, liberated platform, then we don't have any particular attraction or non-attraction to the material world. It's also Brahman, right? It's another energy of the Lord, and so that aspect is not a problem, and we understand the transcendental nature of the Lord, we understand the transcendental nature of ourselves. But, so that knowledge will have gotten us there. But now to get beyond that, then we have to go deeper into this knowledge of relationship. Right? These are the fundamental points, but these fundamental points are what has reached down into this world, that they have their original root there. It means everyone is servant, but then how are they servant? Right? In the various relationships, We have five main relationships, and then there's the seven secondary, and then there's all the different kinds of transcendental, you know, emotion and transcendental exchange that is there within the Lord's pastimes. So then that actually becomes the real knowledge, right? Because that will last eternally. But this other, that Krishna is God and I am servant, and all that, that only has its need while that conditioning is there. Otherwise, then the residents of Vrindavan, they're not worshipping Krishna because he's God. They're worshipping because he's the nicest person. He's the most wonderful person. Right? Because if you worship him because he's God, that's actually a condition, you know, like that. You're not doing it. It's not, how do you say it? It's not really pure. Because he's God, you're worshipping him. If he wasn't God, you wouldn't worship him. Right? Therefore, the materialists, they don't see Krishna as God. They don't worship. And if he does something special, okay, then maybe they respect him. You know, the yogis see him as the greatest yogi, and, you know, different persons see him as in different ways. As we see in the wrestling arena, so many people saw him in different ways. But the pure unalloyed devotees, they worship him not because he's God, because he's just so wonderful. Right? So that's another, yes. Yes, so that's another thing. But that comes after that attraction is there for Krishna. And that's then that kind of knowledge starts to have serious meaning. Otherwise it doesn't have meaning. Right? You know, like when a child is very small, you know, all the duties of household life have no real serious meaning. You know, but the essence is, you know, you have to be dutiful, you have to, you know, do the proper activities and, you know, learn to behave and respect and all these different things. So those are fundamental points. When they get bigger, then those other things will have some meaning. Right? Before that, they won't. Well, they won't have any meaning. You know, so in the same way is this knowledge that I'm not this body, I'm servant of Krishna, that will develop into those things naturally. Right? In the association of devotees, hearing from the scriptures, that will naturally come. Right? It's just the process. You know, just as the child matures, then they understand what is the more broad meaning of these basic points of being responsible. So now it's being responsible means, you know, I don't yell and scream when, you know, guests are here, and I deal respectfully with those that are bigger than me, and, you know, I don't, you know, kill the ones that are younger than me, and all these kind of things. So then, but when they get bigger, they understand that much more. It just, that comes. If they're in association with those who are mature. Like that, or at least more mature than them. That will bring them to the next stage. Right? So this is the balance. So the next, those will come. So it's not that it goes away. That's the idea. Oh, I've learned that. No, we've never learned. If we've learned that, we'll go deeper into it. It's not that, it's not like you're stepping on top. That's the Mayavadi's idea. Is that you approach Guru, you know, you approach the scriptures, you approach so many things, your rituals, the deity, and you worship. And this purifies you, situates you in goodness, and then you come to the point of understanding your Brahman, and you step on their head and go to the Brahman. You don't need it anymore. Like that. That's just their accepted theory. We hear, we say it, and it sounds so, you know, uncultured. But they'll say this very openly. It's just, you know, it's understood. Because if you become God, then what do you, you don't need guru, you don't need anything. It's just an accepted fact. It's just, you know, it's accepted unculturedness. You know, like amongst Mlechas and Yavanas, then bad behavior is just accepted norm. So no one's embarrassed speaking about it. So in the same way, they're not embarrassed. So the point is it's not that you step on top of that and move. No, it's a matter of you enter it, you go deeply into it. Because one point has unlimited understandings, like that. But this is the point from which you can judge so much development. You know, that's like the anchor. It holds. You can. It holds the whole thing together. Does that make sense? A little louder.
Pure animal devotees who worship Krishna because he's so wonderful, they forget their previous knowledge, or they just don't pay attention to it.
You don't pay attention. It's just like, let's say you have a mother, right? And she's raised her child, and she has affection. Then when he grows up, then he becomes, you know, some big person in the world. You know, very famous, very powerful, very rich. The knowledge is there, okay, you know, yeah, so. But it's not the reason why she has affection for the son. It has nothing to do with it. You know what I'm saying? He may be God. So what? Even if he is, it doesn't matter. You know? But the point is it's not there. Therefore you see, the acharyas have come, they can speak about these things very nicely. It's not that they're in ignorance. You know? They forget about these in the pastime and all this out of their affection. When they come here and they're trying to explain Krishna's glories, then they have to break it down into something. You have to speak to your audience. Right? Just like you may have a very educated person and they are asked a question by a 5-year-old, they're not going to talk like a very educated person. They're going to take what they know and cook it down to the essence and say it in a language that the child can understand within the context of the child's like perception. Like that. So that's what the acharyas are doing here. So this looks very technical and very advanced for us. But for them, this is just like very essential. Like that. You know, what they're interested in this is unlimited, you know, wonderfulness, is beauty, like Navayovana. That's what's more, when they're talking about unlimited, that's what they're more, interested in. Not interested in these unlimited, that all the potencies are coming from him and he's the source of everything, controller of everything. No, it's just that whatever wonderful qualities he has, every moment they get more. Right? It means every moment you see Krishna, it's as if you haven't seen him before. Okay. So that's their viewpoint. Okay? You want to say something?
I just have two questions for Raj. I bet Acharya gets rid of the false ego by his mercy and the false ego of Raj. It also includes Acharya Bhav. It frees us from that also.
The Aishwarya, how do you say? Because Aishwarya, well, it depends. It means for us, or the Aishwarya means of the.
For us, that misconception of.
Well, yeah, it means that, because that would be all within our ego, that I'm, you know, I have some opulence. It means I'm very intelligent, I'm very wealthy, I'm very beautiful, very renowned, very famous, very. You know, some very powerful something. So that's all just part of the ego. It's just, otherwise, means the ego has to be focused, so it'll be focused on opulence. Because God is the source of all potencies, and he's the enjoyer of those potencies. We want to be God, so we want to enjoy the potencies. So it will always be in the form of opulence, of Aishwarya.
I was thinking more in terms of how I perceive Krishna. He also is the one that we approach in prayer.
Oh, I see. Means because he's God.
Yeah, as well.
That would come from the point. That would be more of association, because it's a matter of the residence. Basically, other than Braja, that concept is there. In Vaikuntha, then it's like that is the main feeling. In Mathura and Dwarka, then it's mixed. it's both the opulence. He is supreme, but at the same time, he's just so wonderful. So the both things are there. You know, like we see with Devaki and Vasudeva. When Krishna was born, they were totally in awe and reverence and standing there and offering prayers. He's God. And they recognize him like that. But then they ask him to turn into a child. And then motherly and fatherly affections are there. Like that. So they can accommodate both. But we see that Mother Jashoda, she couldn't. As soon as she saw the universal form within Krishna's mouth, it's just like then she can't function like that. It just doesn't work like that. But for them, they can do that, because in Dwarka, it's like the junction between Vaikuntha and Braj, like that. So it has both those elements there. So that would be more of just the association of those who are interested in Vrindavan. You know, Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, their works, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam. So that then focuses us on Vrindavan. Then that will take care of that. Here it's like a Dvaitacharya is more as the false conceptions and the giving up improper activities that are not useful for devotional service. You know, that establishing, you know, proper activities that are favorable. Like that.
The other question was, is it appropriate to use prayer and contemplation as a way of going deeper?
Yeah.
And you obviously have to think about who you pray to, about certain things.
Yeah. No, this prayer is very much, it's one of the nine processes. So it's very much, we see the Acharyas then like in their songs, these are prayers. And that there they practically combine that cult, the philosophy into their life. And so that creates that culture like that. So it's a very important part like that. You know, prayer always has to be there, and some will emphasize that more, some maybe less, but it always has to be there.
It seems it has a powerful role as an affirmation. It seems it would have a powerful role as affirmation, because there's so much affirmation by material energy of who we are. Mm. Especially
looking at
your course,
I'm just
finding it's just powerful
spiritual affirmation. Yeah. Means it should be done. But according to the individual, they'll find comfort in more or less. Like someone might just feel comfortable, you know, saying prayers and all these all day, their own prayers, the other prayers. You know, but then it also becomes part of like kirtanam, you know, glorifying the Lord like that. So it's like how, but always prayer has to be there, like that. We have to recognize ourselves, recognize the Lord, and that relationship. Like that. So prayer is very essential. Because like prayer also then means that we want something. So if we want to get away from the material world and connect ourselves to Krishna, then the prayer is establishing that point. You know, unless of course we're praying to Krishna to, you know, take care of our material problems. You know, then at least we've turned to Him. We've recognized Him as the actual controller and source of everything. And all actions, you know, go back to Him. So you perform an activity, the result of that activity is coming from Him. So therefore it wants you to go to Him. But that's not so pleasing. But at least it's nice. Krishna will fulfill because you've come to Him. You've recognized that He is the one that's actually doing it. It's not ourselves or not the demigods or not the material energy or like that. So it's okay. But it's the problem is then we may end up with something other than Krishna. Krishna will fulfill that desire, but we'll get that desire and then we may forget Krishna. Of course, Krishna is the most clever, but you know, for a smooth running, then that we don't get upset or blame Krishna. Why? Like I remember one mother they were driving and they had a car accident, and there are five of them in the car, husband, wife, three sons. So everybody else came out of the accident without a scratch, basically. But one of the sons died. And of the sons, he was like the most pious, most devotional, most intelligent, most, attractive. Everybody liked him, got along with everybody. So then it comes down to why this should happen to him, because he wants attachments and he's good, so why should something bad happen? Like this. So then one has one's own ideas, and one is approaching God for, one has a different idea of devotional service. Is that by performance of devotional service, then everything will be pious and wonderful. So that's a natural approach to religion, is that by religion, then I will get the relationships and the economic development that I'm looking for. Like that. I will avoid bad relationships and bad economic situations. And so when things go that way, then we wonder what's going on. If God's in control, then why is he letting this happen? Right? So the difficulty is we're leaving ourselves out of the equation, that due to our relationships, our activities in the past, therefore situations have manifest today. That we want it by our action. Actions speak louder than words. So you did it, therefore you're going to get the result. It means you wanted it. You wanted it, otherwise why did we do it? So then we're getting that result, and then we're complaining, and then we're trying to blame God. Like that. Or if we understand that that's futile, then we'll try to blame someone else. But generally we'll avoid blaming ourselves, that it's due to our activities that this has happened. Like that. So and the other living entities, they have their results to work out and live out. And so therefore, there's something common that those different souls came together and were called a family. But there was only a certain purpose it came together for. And when that purpose is fulfilled, then it moves apart. Anything else on this?
That means we have to be very careful when we're choosing what is favorable for devotional service, and it's not tinged.
Means, point is that if it's tinged, as long as it's directed towards Krishna, it's okay. But it's not ideal. It's better than if it's materially tinged and not directed at Krishna. That is what we have to avoid. So at least it's directed towards Krishna. But why, Prabhupada always gives the example of why go to a exceedingly wealthy person and ask for, one rupee, when he could give so much. So in the same way as we're approaching Krishna, we could get pure love for him by which he is controlled. It means you have him, you have everything. There's nothing to gain. Right? There's nothing more to gain than that. But instead, then we ask for something here, a little money, or some sickness will go away, or some difficult situation will adjust itself, or like that. So those are very easy, They're big for us, but as far as we look at the bigger picture, they're not very great. Like that. So then we could get something much greater. Because those things are, basically going to happen anyway. It's a material world. So why not work on a more serious solution to get out of this material world by developing our affection for Krishna? Right? Then we don't have any more of these small problems. You solve the 100-rupee problem, then you have no more 1-rupee, 2-rupee problems. Like that.
Okay.
knowing us. In the scripture Srimad Bhagavatam, pure devotional service to Lord Vishnu is described. That devotional service is the eternal activity of the individual soul. Three different conceptions of the soul's nature are described in the material world. They are, one, the eternal nature, two, the temporary nature, and three, the nature that contradicts the eternal nature. The conception that rejects the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the eternal soul is the third of these. The conception that accepts the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and declares that one should employ temporary material means to win his mercy is the second of these. Conception of the soul's temporary nature. Conception that accepts the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and declares that one should employ temporary material means to win his mercy is the second of these, the conception of the soul's temporary nature. The conception that declares that by employing the activities of spiritual love, one should strive to obtain direct service to Lord Krishna is the first of these, the conception of the Lord's eternal nature. The conception of the soul's eternal nature may be described differently in different countries, among different people, and in different languages. But these descriptions all refer to the same eternal nature of the soul. Still, the Vaishnava religion followed in India is the original form, the prototype of all these conceptions of the soul's eternal nature. And the form of the Vaishnava religion that Lord Chaitanya, who is the son of Sachi and the Lord of our hearts, taught the world is the purest form of the Vaishnava religion. The form that the great souls filled with the bliss of pure spiritual love accept and follow. At this point, the saintly sannyasi folded his hands and said, "O Master, at every moment I see that what was taught by Lord Chaitanya, the son of Sachi, is the best form of pure Vaishnava religion. I also see that the theory of impersonal monism taught by Sankaracharya is very wretched and horrible." Okay. Now he's going to go into another point. So basically you have these three concepts of the soul's nature. So there's the impious idea that we ignore God's position or ignore the soul's position, and we make up various kinds of ideas based on this. You know, Buddhism, all these different things. Then the other is that we're accepting Krishna's position, the soul's position, but we're doing it through the conditioned nature. So this is the, like the pious forms, you know, if we're wanting our own, what we want from it, or we're taking the, we, you know, engaging in the Lord's service through these pious things. But the highest is the pure nature of the soul as servant of Krishna. And so that needs to be the essential element. The Vaishnava religion, that's the main thing, is that even though it may be favorable for our conditioned state to engage the conditioned nature in the Lord's service, which means we're in the second of the conceptions, it's still based on the foundation of the first. It's not independent. It means there are those pious people that we follow the Vedas, perform pious activities, and this is the proper thing. You know, we'll go to the heavenly planets, or we'll, in this way we'll elevate ourselves. So that is this way, it's not proper. But means those activities, you know, in the mode of goodness that are favorable for devotional service, those will be performed. That's all part of sadhana bhakti. But the essence of it is that we are servant of the Lord. Like that has to be the motive behind. Otherwise, then, even as Vaishnavas, following the Vedic culture, we may get distracted. We might take an overbalance that something is more important than another. And then we will be distracted. So that always must be kept as the forefront. Though, and always be careful of understanding the entangling nature of the material energy. Because you take one thing and then it just keeps going. So the more you go into it, the deeper it becomes and the more you become engrossed. So one has to understand is that we're trying to pull back from that and deal with the material nature, how much we have to, and only that much, only get involved that much. But the central feature is we're servant of Krishna. And then by that we enter into, and then we become completely entangled in that, and then, you know, we are lost in this entanglement with Krishna. As in the last verse of, I think it's Prarthana by Narottam Das Thakur, he's describing the wonderful ocean of Radha and Krishna's pastimes. And he says he's fallen into this ocean and he's drowning in this ocean. And unfortunately, he doesn't know how to swim. So it looks like he's going to be hopelessly drowned in this ocean of Radha Krishna's wonderful pastimes. So that entanglement's okay. So that's the point. We're going to get entangled. It's just which side do you want to get entangled in? Mind has to be engaged. Where do we want to be entangled? That's all. So if we want to be entangled with Krishna, therefore our dealing with the material world is calculated. It's just this much. And that's all. So according to our specific conditioning, we'll only engage that much. You know, what's favorable, we'll engage that much. We won't take it more than that. And so then, gradually, we'll purify that, and then we'll find that even that's not necessary. As that's purified, and those attachments or those identities are given up, then we find even those aren't necessary. So that's actually the purpose of the whole Varnashram system and all these things of religion. Like that. But Vaishnava religion, then Vaishnavism means that it's being done for Krishna. And then of that, then the what is given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's the purest form. It's not that the others are not pure. This is within pure, this is more pure. Because there's the concept of that you're worshipping Krishna because he's God is not part of it. It's only used to bring us out of the material world like that and turn our face towards Krishna. But it's not the ultimate. From there then that's where things begin. Like that. So the idea is that it's pure, unalloyed Vaishnava religion. While others are pure Vaishnava religion. But this is pure unalloyed. Any questions on this? Right. So different places, different countries, they're describing the same thing. Therefore, technically, we have no problem with what they're saying. We, you know, but why you'll follow a less developed thing when you have a more developed, right? It's like, why will you use a hammer to open a can or a screwdriver when you have a can opener? It can be done, but a can opener will do a much easier and better job. The other will definitely open the can. But it's a little, the results aren't as pleasant. So we don't have any disagreements on their actual concept, the real concepts of their religion. Maybe how they interpret it, how they imply it, just like Christianity, thou shalt not kill. So we have no problem with that. But we have a problem when they say, well, actually, thou shalt not kill means thou shalt not murder, means don't kill humans, means you can kill anything else and eat it. But, like that. So then probably, no, it says thou shalt not kill. This is the point. So you're misinterpreting, you're taking it. So well, that we may have a disagreement with. Just as disseminated down and then at different places to some circumstances, then it manifests like that. So when you clear away all the cheating aspects of the religion, its pure form, then that we see one can find in all religious systems. Things that are, proper. Like that. Okay. Next point he's saying here. Still, a thought has arisen in my mind. A thought I will not accept. A thought I will not accept it unless it is first placed before your feet. It is this. Is the state of deep spiritual ecstatic love, as revealed by Lord Chaitanya, really different from the state of merging into the impersonal supreme? When he heard the name Shankaracharya, the Paramahamsa Babaji at once offered dandavat obeisances. Now he spoke the following words. O noble-hearted friend, one should always think, Shankaracharya is Lord Shiva himself. Shankaracharya is actually the spiritual master of all the Vaishnavas. That is why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu honors him with the title Acharya. Shankaracharya is a perfect Vaishnava. When Shankaracharya appeared in Bharatvarsha, there was a great need for a guna avatar of the Lord. The voidist philosophy of Buddha had already practically destroyed the teachings of the Vedas, and the duties of Varnashram. Voidist Buddhism even denied the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although it did hint at the existence of the individual soul. Buddhism denied the soul's true eternal nature. At that time, the Brahmanas had practically become Buddhists and practically abandoned the religion of the Vedas. At that time, extraordinarily powerful Lord Shiva descended as Shankaracharya to this world, reestablished the authority of the Vedas, and transformed voidist Buddhism into the philosophy of Vedic impersonalism. For succeeding in this extraordinary work, the world will be long indebted to Shankaracharya. Every work in this world may be considered in two ways. Some work is useful in the context of a certain period of time, and other work is useful for all time. Shankara performed work that was very important for that particular period in history. From his efforts, many good results came. Sri Ramanuja Acharya and Sri Madhvacharya built the palace of pure Vaishnava religion on the walls and foundation created by Sri Shankaracharya. Therefore, Shankaracharya is a great friend of the Vaishnava religion. He is one of its founding teachers. The benefit created by Shankaracharya's teaching is now enjoyed without any effort on their part by the Vaishnavas. Individual souls still in the grip of material bondage urgently need to understand their relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The individual soul is different from and superior to the gross and subtle material bodies in the material universes. The Vaishnavas and Shankaracharya agree on this point. They do not disagree on the spiritual nature of the individual soul. liberation is defined as becoming free from the material world. Both agree on this also. Up to the stage of liberation, Shankaracharya and the Vaishnavas agree on many points. By worshipping Lord Hari, one purifies his heart and attains liberation. Shankaracharya teaches this also. However, about the state of existence that is superior to impersonal liberation, Shankaracharya is silent. Shankaracharya knew well that if the individual soul employed the worship of Lord Hari as the way to proceed on the path of liberation, the soul would begin to taste the pleasures of devotional service. And would eventually become a pure devotee of Lord Hari. It is for this reason that Shankaracharya, after showing the true path, did not reveal anything more about the secrets of Vaishnava religion. They who carefully study all his commentaries can see that this was Shankaracharya's hidden intention. It is only they who waste time merely circle the outskirts of Shankaracharya's teachings, who stay far away from the Vaishnava religion. Being one with the Supreme Lord and obtaining love for him are, in one sense, the same thing. However, they who narrowly define oneness with the Lord claim that it is different from love for the Lord. Consider for a moment the meaning of the word love. The thing that attracts one spiritual entity to another spiritual entity is called love. If the two spiritual entities are not in truth different from each other, they cannot love each other. All spiritual entities are naturally attracted to the supreme spiritual entity, Lord Krishna Chandra. That attraction is called Krishna Prema, or love for Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna Chandra and the individual spirit souls are eternally distinct spiritual entities. Therefore, the love they bear for each other is an eternal fact. Three things exist eternally. One, the enjoyer. Two, the enjoyed. Three, the way enjoyment is obtained. If the person who enjoys by loving another is identical with the object of his enjoyment or love, then the love he feels can never be eternal. If oneness is defined as the spiritual living entity's pure state, where he is free from any contact with matter, then oneness and spiritual love are identical. However, the present-day pundit, followers of Shankaracharya, are not content to accept such a definition. Instead, they undertake a great struggle to prove that the Vedas teach the existence of ultimately only one spiritual entity, an entity who transforms himself into everything that exists. Such a view kills the eternal existence of love. The Vaishnavas have conclusively proved that this view contradicts the true teachings of the Vedas. Shankaracharya affirmed that the pure spiritual state is one of perfect oneness. However, his present-day followers do not understand the hidden meaning of his words. Thus they gradually ascribe to him a position not truly his own. They declare the various stages of pure spiritual love to be products of the illusory potency Maya. It is for this reason that the three is called Mayavad. It is the lowest and most horrible of all theories in the world. The Mayavad philosophers refuse to accept the existence of more than one spiritual entity. They refuse to accept the existence of spiritual love. They say that the Supreme Spirit, Brahman, stays aloof from matter only as long as he remains one and undivided. They say that when he assumes any form of his own or the forms of the many individual souls, he's in the group of the illusion Maya. Thus they think that the eternal, pure, and spiritual form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a manifestation of the illusory potency Maya. They think the separate existence of the individual spirit soul is an illusion created by Maya. They think that spiritual love and its manifestations are all products of the illusory potency, Maya. They affirm that meditation on the oneness of everything is the only thing beyond Maya's touch. Thus, these bewildered fellows' idea of oneness is not at all the same as spiritual love. However, the spiritual love Lord Chaitanya tasted in his pastimes and taught to the world is completely beyond the touch of the illusory potency Maya. That love is the highest fruit of pure spiritual oneness. Mahabhav is the specific transformation of that pure spiritual love. It is a very intense form of the bliss of pure love for Lord Krishna. In the confidential relationship between the lover and the beloved reaches an intensity never known before. On the other hand, the Mayavad philosophy is shallow and unimportant. It can never understand that exalted love. Then the saintly sannyasi respectfully said, O Master, my heart is filled with conviction that the Mayavad theory is shallow and unimportant. Any doubt I had about that is now thrown far away by your mercy. Still, I myself wear the garments of a Mayavad sannyasi. Now I yearn to rid myself of them. Okay, so this is now going to go into the next point. So we see that Shankara, what he has done is very important for the whole, the establishing the Vaishnava tradition. Because unless one's following the Vedic culture and accepting the Vedas, then how will one perfect oneself? Because knowledge is coming from the Vedas, religion is coming from the Vedas, and it's by religion that when we are going to elevate ourselves, purify ourselves. And that is where the Vedic literatures is where we gain our knowledge and understanding from which then the next stages can take place. So that is important. Plus the concepts of the soul and the material energy up to the point of liberation are the same. They're saying it's illusion and that the living entity should try to free themselves from it. And they use the processes of, you know, religion and knowledge and all these things. Even the worship of the Supreme Lord. But the problem is once one gets to that platform, then they don't recognize the difference between the soul and the Lord. That relationship there. That is where the weakness is. So Shankara is not actually saying that, but his followers are understanding that. Because they're coming from the Buddhist philosophy, and so then they're coming from Buddhism into this impersonalism. So they've gone from void to impersonal. So at least they've gone from there's nothing to at least there's spirit, there's Brahman. So they've improved themselves. But they can't understand the spiritual love because there must be a difference, right? Like that. There has to be a difference. Then that can be manifest. Otherwise, what's the meaning? One has, they have affection, but unless there's ability to interact, how is that manifest? Like that. So they don't understand. Okay. Any questions on this? The saintly Babaji replied, O great soul, I do not teach that one should like or hate any particular kind of garments. When one's heart is purified, his garments will also become pure. When a person gives great respect to his outward garments, it shows that he does not give great attention to the condition of his heart. In my opinion, one should first purify his heart, then he may adopt the external activities and garments of a saintly person without committing an offense. In your heart, become a sincere follower of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Then you will naturally desire to accept the external things that are appropriate for that following. Let that be the way you act. Always remember these words of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 16, 238-239. Markata vairagya na kara loka dekana jata jogya Bishai, Buya, Anashaktahai. You should not make yourself a show bottle devotee and become a false renunciate. For the time being, enjoy the material world in a befitting way and do not become attached to it. Antare nishta kara, bahye loka vyavahara, achirat Krishna tomai, karibe udara. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, within your heart you should keep yourself very faithful, but externally you may behave like an ordinary man. Thus Krishna will soon be pleased and deliver you from the clutches of Maya. Understanding the saintly sannyasi did not say anything more about changing his garments. Folding his hands, he said, "O Master, I am your disciple, and I have taken shelter of your feet. Whatever instruction you give, I will place on my head without argument. By hearing your words, I have understood that pure love for Lord Krishna is the only Vaishnava religion. That love is the eternal religion of the soul. That religion is perfect, pure, and natural. How should I regard the other religions in the various countries of the world?" The saintly Babaji replied, "O great soul, religion is one, it is not two, it is not many. There is only one religion for the soul. That religion is called the Vaishnava religion. There's no reason why religion should be different for different languages, countries, and peoples. The religion of the soul may be called by different names, but it is not possible that there can be different religions. The religion of the soul is the pure love the atomic spiritual entity bears for the supreme spiritual entity. Because of differing material conceptions, some spirit souls have distorted that original religion and given it a variety of different shapes. The pure and original form of the soul's religion is the Vaishnava religion. Other so-called religions are merely distorted forms of the Vaishnava religion. Other religions are pure to the degree that they are like the Vaishnava religion. Some days ago in Sri Vajradham, I placed the same question before the feet of Srila Sanatan Goswami, who is a personal associate of Lord Chaitanya. Sanatan Goswami. In the religion of the Yavanas, there is a word esk. Oh no, this is him. In the religion of the Yavanas, there is a word esk. Does this word mean pure spiritual love, or does it not? That was my question. The saintly Goswami is learned in all scriptures, and he is especially learned in the language of the Yavanas. In that language, his learning has no limit. Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami, and many other learned scholars were also present in that assembly. Saintly Srila Sanatan Goswami kindly replied in these words, "Yes, the word esk means love. When the Yavanas worship God, they use the word esk. However, esk is often used to mean material love also. Examples of this may be seen in the history of Layalya, Majanu, and the writings of Hafiz. The Yavana Acharyas could not understand the true meaning of spiritual life. When they write of esk, they mean love in terms of either the gross or subtle material bodies. However, they could not distinguish between material love and pure spiritual love, and thus they could not understand pure love for Lord Krishna. I have not seen an accurate description of spiritual love in any of the books of the Yavana teachers. I have seen them only in the books describing the Vaishnava religion. The Yavana teachers use the word lu to describe the pure individual soul. However, they could not understand the soul in truth. They used the word ru to describe the conditioned soul bound by Maya. That was all they could understand. I have not seen a description of pure love for Krishna in any but the Vaishnava religion. Generally speaking, pure love for Lord Krishna is described only in the books of the Vaishnava religion. Pure love for Lord Krishna is described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2. Dharma Projita Kaitava. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are maturely motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth. I am confident that before Lord Krishna Chaitanya came to this world, no one had given a complete description of pure love for Lord Krishna. If you have faith in my words, then you may accept this conclusion. After hearing these instructions again and again, I offered dandavat obeisances to Srila Sanatan Goswami. At that time, the saintly sannyasi offered dandavat obeisances. Then the Paramahamsa Babaji said, "O great devotee, now I will answer your second question." So, So the dress, the main thing is that the mentality is there. So what is favorable, that is what should be done. Otherwise, if one accepts the dress and that's not the mentality, then it doesn't, it's not so advantageous. So the whole idea is that we should understand what is our position and dress according to that. So that is there. Therefore, in the Vedic system, then brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. So we see that, and we see our position, and according to that, then we dress accordingly. You know, that is the thing. It should be situated. Otherwise, for a moment, there may be that great enthusiasm. We may have some experience, and then we're very enthusiastic, and then we rush and do something. But then later we may find that that mentality is not really fully there. So that, therefore, it is not, one doesn't rush into these things. So it takes it very steady, like that. Therefore, it's that's that point. And then the other point is that all the religions, the point is that one is supposed to develop one's love for God. So to that degree, they're explaining these points. To that degree, then they're having the proper conclusions. And then when they take that and twist that and, you know, for their own purposes, establish their own code of rituals and all that, that are not necessarily in pursuance of that, then to that degree it is not very useful. But in Sanatana Goswami's opinion, basically only the Vaishnava religion is giving this, and only Lord Chaitanya's conclusions are giving the topmost essence. So that is what Sanatana Goswami is. So any questions on this? Yes.
Now, I said if you study Shankaracharya's writings that he stopped talking about after the point of liberation, he stopped talking about Krishna, the qualities of Krishna. This was to so the people wouldn't follow that process, because if they took the process of worshipping, well, they would actually naturally become attracted and become devotees.
They become?
Yeah, I thought you indicated that the followers, if they took that path, there would be a natural attraction and waiting for devotion for Krishna. Yeah. And therefore he didn't pursue that process.
Means he didn't describe it because he knew that it would come automatically. If you follow these principles to become freed from the material energy and you worship the Supreme Lord, then the natural thing was is you would go through liberation and beyond into the proper devotional understanding. So he didn't explain it, because his purpose was to defeat the Buddhism and it reestablish the Vedic culture and knowledge. Well, if he had made that strongly there, they may not have been able to digest it. So that's why it says is that there's activities that are good for the time, place, and circumstance, and those that are good eternally. So his was specifically for a time in history. So therefore he did like that. But he's left it open, so if one really studies it, one will see that this is what he means. Like that. Otherwise, then, you know, then they will change. His last instructions is to worship Govinda, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda, Murumate. So the unfortunately, they take it that because his spiritual master was named Govinda, so therefore, you know, they say that you should worship his spiritual master. You know, so him, his spiritual master, you know, all these things like that. So these ones stay around the edge and miss the point. His point was, you should worship Govinda. This is the essence of all the teaching. You know, by that you will get liberation, by that you go beyond liberation. But they didn't understand, unfortunately. But otherwise, if he had made that point strongly, they wouldn't follow. There is one book of Shankara where he talks about Radha Krishna pastimes and all these different things. And the Shankarites will acknowledge that he wrote the book, but they can't for the life of them understand why he wrote the book. You know, why, what was the purpose? It just doesn't fit. They can't figure it out. So it's there, But they don't, you know, out of curiosity they might read it, but it's not something they study or propagate. Or, but it's there. And there is a book.
Yeah. It seems that you're saying that in the line of Shankaracharya's teachings, if someone proceeds, then one comes to the understanding that Krishna is a person.
Yeah. But that's what Shankara gave. That's not what the people nowadays are professing. So therefore, basically the Vaishnavs can understand that from his teachings. And unfortunately, the conditioned soul have a tendency to misunderstand those teachings. I mean, the conditioned soul has a tendency to misunderstand the Vaishnava teachings, which is so direct, and then you end up with all these apasampadayas and all kinds of different things. So the point was, is it's there. He did not contradict the eternal religion in description of what he's done. Therefore, Ramanuja and Madhu can make a foundation on that and then build the proper explanation like that. He doesn't contradict.
When we say that the Mayavadi teachings are offensive towards Krishna, then Shankaracharya wasn't offensive in any way.
He's not a Mayavadi.
Yeah. What he was saying is offensive.
Yeah. Means his followers are Mayavadis, but he's not a Mayavadi. Okay. And his teachings technically aren't Mayavadi. But only Vaishnavas really can understand that. You know, so by worshipping of Hari, then naturally then you would take up those processes to worship, then you would associate with those who do that worship, then you would take up devotional service. But they somehow or another kind of miss this point. You know, it's like Shankaracharya established Guru Vayur. He installed the deity, established all the worship there and everything, so they worship the deity. So. But when the Shankaracharya comes there to visit, he doesn't go in the temple. Right? God's everywhere, but he's not in the deity. It's an interesting point, but whatever. So he just comes and, you know, circumambulates himself from outside the temple compound and then leaves. Like that. So it's a... But these are the followers. These aren't Shankara. So we have no problem with Shankara. It's just his followers and the misunderstanding of his teachings. So, in other words, what is already there in his teaching, what is in his teachings, is already contained in ours. So there's no need to study his separately. And goes much deeper, because then the Vaishnava understanding, the actual position is not hidden, it's directly manifest, you know, in the Vaishnava religion, especially what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving. Like you see, of the Acharyas, we don't have any problem with Shankara, right? But others, they don't have a good word to say. We call him Shankaracharya. Others don't. They just call him Shankara. You know, so they don't. They avoid like that.
Okay. You said that ability to interact as well as attraction is necessary to express transcendental love. And that ability to interact means culture, is that what you mean?
Yeah, it would be through the culture. Like that. That's why you have the whole, you know, that whole spiritual culture that's there. And it's basically reflection is the Vedic culture. Is that it's a system which you can interact with, one living entity can interact with another living entity. So in the spiritual world, then it's how the living entities interact with Krishna and with each other in relationship to Krishna. So the Vedic culture is actually for the purpose of how living entities can relate to each other in relationship to Krishna. But it can also be used in a mundane way, so they just learn how to interact with each other without taking Krishna into consideration.
So the essence for us would be nectar devotion, nectar instruction?
Yeah, like that. These are there, because that's the devotional process, Pancharatra, these contain whatever is necessary. And then if that can engage one fully, then those are the essence. I mean, the Bhagavat's the essence, and the Pancharatra then is next, the kind of like takes the Bhagavat and puts it into Vaidhi, you know, into rules, so that we can, you know, identify and keep ourselves from falling down in the material nature. It like enforces a lifestyle in the mode of goodness, like that. And then Varnashram is then, if that's not fully engaging, then we have to take from there just how much is favorable to engage more than that. More needs, more attractions, more attachments are there. Or if you have to establish, you know, how you say, you want to manage something, then you have to use the principles of Varnashram. Pancharatra doesn't give principles of management. It just says the deity is worshipped in this way. But now you have big worship, you have head pujari, you have so many other pujaris, and so many duties must be done, how they relate to each other, that you'll get from Varnashram. So, you know, because its purpose is the same as the Bhagavad. The Pancharatra's purpose is the same as the Bhagavad. But it just caters to the needs of the conditioned soul. Like that. While in the spiritual world, it doesn't have to have, you're not, the system is not dealing with a gross and subtle body that are separate from the soul. It's not that in that package of engaging the gross and subtle body, the soul is also being brought close to the Krishna. In the spiritual world, the form is the living entity. Because the form is spiritual, there's no difference between the two, so it's not something that has to be given up. Therefore, the activities there are eternal. While in the material world, we use the Varnashram, but still, at one point, it's also, one has to move through it and also, you know, give up the different stages and also give it up at some point. Like that. When one is liberated. Like that. Because it's dealing with the gross. And when the gross disappears, there's no need of the Varnashram system. Because that's only to engage the gross and subtle bodies in the Lord's service. So once one's liberated, it has no meaning. For preaching, yes, but for one's individual needs, it's not necessary. Well, in the spiritual world, those activities and relationships are dealing with the pure soul. So they have meaning. Make sense? Anything else?
You mentioned in the beginning the process of relationship, attraction, attachment, and activity. So what's the difference between attraction and attachment?
Attraction is like a desire for attachment is a need. Like that. So the real need, you mentioned before, the real need is for the living entity to develop that relationship and love for Krishna. That's the real need. But unfortunately, we have a lot of other priorities in between that. So we become attracted to and we become attached to. Means your attraction is kind of like what brings you in that direction. You know, the attachment is like what you want to obtain. Right? That attachment will be manifest through that attraction. Means depending upon the kind of attraction that's there, then the attachment will be manifest. Right? Father is attached to the son. Mother's attached to the son. Brother's attached to the brother. But because of their particular kind of attraction, right? Their attachment's the same. But because of their attraction, then it's different. You know? So therefore, the relationship of the mother with the son is going to be different than the father with the son or the brother with the brother. Does that make sense? And so then that you do something with that, and so that's the activities. Right? So that's the devotional process or the activities of devotional service. Does that make some sense? Okay. So they're both there. So attraction is sambandha, and the attachment, that's the prayojana. Okay. That makes sense. Anything else?
of stuff here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadhi Thabha Kurindaki, Jaya Nathakam.